Welcome to my Latinx life. Join me as I journey to learn, educate, and highlight Latinx leaders in a comfortable setting similar to your mom's kitchen. We'll explore a variety of topics with guest and reoccurring hosts. I'm your host, Joe Redondo, and this is my Latinx life. Okay, and we're back. Our guest again is still Pilar Pacheco from the Gates Foundation. Thank you, Pilar, again for joining us. So we're going to keep talking about relationships, and then we're going to now delve into a little different part of the relationships and how, and we may go back and forth and things like that. So don't feel like you have to stay on point. But you mentioned that you have a boyfriend, and yes, he doesn't currently reside in the U.S., and he's currently not even in the country that he lives in, correct? No. So how do you manage that relationship? Because it's not like you're close where you can just jump across the border.
Yeah, and it's funny because I have family in the U.S. My parents and my brother and his family are in Florida, Miami, Florida, and my sister is in Atlanta, Georgia. So I'm kind of used to being, you know, having like long distance relationships with people. And so, you know, but that's a flight away. It's a 5-6 hour flight at the most. But with my boyfriend, he lives in Honduras, and we get to see each other because I travel a lot for work. I do get a lot of miles, so that helps. So we see each other maybe every other month, and either I go to Honduras or he'll come to the U.S. He's got family in California, in Oxnard, California. So we've gone to his mom's house a few times. But now, since the pandemic, actually, a little bit when things were starting to get crazy, but weren't super serious, early March, I went to Chile to visit my grandmother because she wasn't doing so well health-wise. And my grandmother she just turned 102. So I was like, you always think, oh my gosh, is this going to be the last time I'm going to see my grandma?
And congratulations to her, 102. Wow. Like, she's just thriving and saying, you are stuck with me.
Yeah, no, she is like, when we ask her, so what's your secret, grandma? She's like, I don't eat salty food, or I don't use a lot of salt, and I don't watch the news. Like, okay, that works. But for all of us who are constantly bombarded with news, that doesn't work. So I went to Chile just to make sure that she was okay. And like I said, we never know. I always think this might be the last time I'm going to see my grandmother. Yeah. And no, it wasn't.
So she popped right back up.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, gotcha.
She's doing just fine. It was so funny because my parents flew from Miami to Chile, and I was there, and my family doesn't live in Santiago, the capital. They live in another city, which is north of Santiago. It's a beach town. So my uncle from Santiago also traveled.
Heard that you have a beach house. That's all I heard in this conversation.
Hey, they, you know, and it's...
Do you have any cute nephews, or uncles, or cousins?
Too, but they're all taken.
How serious. I can live in a beach house.
So that was like early March, March 8th, uh-huh, when I went to Chile. And my boyfriend went to El Salvador for work.
Yeah.
He works for a regional NGO. And I was in Chile when the pandemic was declared, and I said, okay, grandma started doing better. So I said, I need to leave because I may end up getting stuck here. You know, different countries started closing borders. The pandemic was really bad in Italy and Spain at that time. And Europe was like hitting like really serious numbers. And the U.S. was as well. So I came back just the day that we started our stay at home order here in Washington. And that was like March 23rd, 24th.
Yeah.
And my boyfriend had been working in El Salvador, and just as he was about to leave, the country closed the borders.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, he said, okay, I'll wait it out till the end of the month, end of March.
Yeah.
It's June 28th. He's still there. Hasn't been able to go back to his country, Honduras, which is only a 5-hour drive.
Crazy.
And yeah, it's been tough. It's been really tough. And it's been tough not being able to see him. Last time we saw each other was in February. So it's a little difficult. And it's kind of funny because my mom reminds me all the time. She says, remember when we were planning on moving to the US,
yeah,
my dad came here first.
Yeah.
And my dad was gone for almost 2 years, a year and a half.
Yeah.
So it's like I have very little recollection of my dad at some points of my childhood.
Yeah.
And so my mom says, remember, I didn't see your dad for more than a year. I'm like, Mom, don't say. And we didn't have WhatsApp and we didn't have, you know, Facebook and all of these things. I'm like, well, but it's not the same.
I'm not saying that you didn't have a problem, Mom. I just need you to be sympathetic with mine today.
I know. But, you know, we make it work. There are, of course, like with everyone, we all have our good days and bad days.
Yeah.
And I personally don't know anybody else who's in that situation, stranded. He's fine. He's in a hotel room. He's in a hotel, living out of a hotel room. He's got food. And he can go to his office, okay, to work at least 4 days out of the week. But it's tough on him. He's got kids in Honduras and he hasn't been able to see his children. And, you know, so he monitors disasters and emergencies for a living. So he's busy. And
clearly right now he's busier than ever.
He's very busy. So that helps. But, you know, it's tough. And long distance relationships, I know that in the past, I think people were more hesitant to be involved in a long distance relationship. I think nowadays it's easier. And because he's got family here, it's like, yeah, we'll probably either end up living in one of the two countries, yep, which I'm okay with Honduras because I've been there and I know what it's like.
Great, then and, you have a place to stay. That's all I need.
Right?
Sounds like Pilar's moving to Honduras and I'll be on vacation in 2022.
But, you know, or we could live in both countries. That's the cool thing about these times.
Yeah.
You know, you can make those times. And the pandemic, I think, it's proven to everyone that we can be very productive working from home. So it's like, I
found that so amazing. Like, I think so many, right, companies were like, no, you can't work from home. You need to be in the office. And yeah, now companies are like, no, we need you to work at home. You, exactly, need to be productive. What can we do? And I'm just like, so basically it was not an actual, there was no real reason. It was just our companies didn't, yeah, want, they needed that control.
I'm like, you know, it's like, of course it's up to us to put boundaries,
yeah,
because you could be working 24/7 and I don't think that's healthy. Yeah. Of course, sometimes you work the 10-hour days or the 12-hour days, but you don't want that to be the norm. And I feel you have to put boundaries and you have to try to stick to a schedule as much as possible. But, you know, working remotely is possible, yeah, and it can be as productive as being in the office, yeah, or sometimes even more because you don't have that many distractions.
Oh, 100%. I agree.
So that's what I tell my boyfriend sometimes. I'm okay working remotely. Even when we didn't have a pandemic and I was traveling so much, I still worked remotely from wherever I was. So, you know, who knows?
I agree. 100%. Like I was telling you, like I want to live in a van.
Yeah.
Which is another episode. So y'all just stay tuned. We're going to talk about like my adventures. But yeah, like it was always about like finding a job that's going to support that. Like there's like, we just live in that world now. Like if we had, exactly, talked about that 20 years ago. Yeah, 100%. It was very different 20 years ago. Like we were not still as well connected. There were still not as many collaborative tools, but we now live in an age where like whatever's on your computer is probably on your phone.
Yeah.
Wherever you go, like you have connection. It's not like so much of the world has internet access or you, yeah, have somewhere you can go get internet access. Like there's just, the world has changed so much and like being, yeah, remote. While yes, there are things I love about being in the office. And I think that both, sure, of us work for companies that have both said like, it's probably going to be the end of the year before we really start going back to work on a, mm-hmm, regular basis. And we may start going back in the fall, but like in very limited capacities.
Yeah.
But like realistically, like I don't imagine like the hospital is going to be normal probably until next summer. Like it's going to be a long time. And for us, it's really going to be based on when there's a vaccine that has a proven track record. I'd imagine it would be very similar to y'all because y'all have to do work in very different places. Like you need that kind of security and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think, like you said, we probably won't have a vaccine until early 2021.
Yeah.
And until then, it's like, do you really want to get that vaccine? Or do you want to wait until,
like, they work out some, you know?
So, yeah, I always think, yeah, I think this has given everyone an opportunity to realize that you can be productive, you can work remotely, and for companies to say, oh yeah, it's okay, you know, our employees are responding well, and we're still meeting as often or even more than I do miss the interactions, the spontaneous interactions, like
the going, hallway chats.
Yeah, like going to get some coffee and running into someone. Mm-hmm. I miss that so much, but it's allowed me to think about possible, you know, future scenarios.
Yeah.
Working remotely from different places here or Honduras, who knows?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that helps nowadays to have these like long distance relationships. But yeah, ideally we want to be a little closer.
Yeah. So yeah, because that's a whole relationship you have to manage now. Also at work is like, how do you interact with your colleagues? Because these are people
it's
that you.
Tough, yeah.
I mean, yes, there's people at work that we all don't like because that's just work and that's just being an adult. But there's people that you kind of like become really good friends with at work because you see them almost every day. You grab lunch with them, especially like in our ERG groups and our inclusion networks and things like that. Like, I kind of miss seeing those people. Like, I miss like just running into them, catching up. So I have to be way more intentional. Are y'all doing any of that with y'all's ERG there at the Gates Foundation?
And that's something I learned from you, actually. So I do think that at least some my team in the beginning, you know, maybe the first couple months, I think we had way too many meetings. It's like, yeah, people really wanted to like not lose touch and wanted to make sure that I see you, but in a good way. It's like, I'm here and let's talk about this. I'm like, we could have done this over a couple of emails and be done, but it's okay. So what we've moved in our team, we've moved to doing what we call the Thursday afternoon soul charge, where we meet for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and someone will, most of the time is our director, she'll just post a question like, I don't know, on a scale of 1 to 2, what color are you feeling today? Or, you know, what are you planning on doing next weekend? Something that has nothing to do with work, and we'll chat. Or so our ERGs, our Latinos in Philanthropy, hadn't been doing that on a regular basis because we're not that many and everyone's like, oh, I just have so many meetings just to have another one scheduled. But then you, Joe, you talked to me about, is it called Cafecito?
Yeah, our Cafecito, which I didn't come up with. I don't want to take full credit. A good colleague of mine that is one of our chairs also, her name is Michelle. She really pushes and advocates for like these kind of safe spaces. And she's really, but we've 100% adopted and we do agree with it. Yeah.
And we do, I want to say that our diversity, equity, and inclusion team, they do a little bit of that. Most of the time is with the ERG leads.
Yeah.
And it's more about the strategy. So it's not so much about like an open time, but after, now that the Black Lives Matter movement is like in full swing, and especially after the George Floyd murder, I think that kicked off all of this, I don't know, pain and anger and all of these different emotions that people really needed a space to talk and share and or just cry. And so that our diversity, equity, and inclusion team started holding these sessions just for people to come together and talk. And as a result of those, something that came up is how are people of color, and the theme that emerged, or the question that emerged, was more in terms of the Asian community and the Latinos. How are you guys dealing with your communities or your family's own racisms?
Yeah.
Or when you want to talk to your elders.
Yeah, because you provided us a bunch of resources, right?
Yeah.
Which I will be putting in our group newsletter, because that's what I'm going to be working on today, is our newsletter this afternoon.
And you know, and that, you know, that was really interesting, because I started looking up resources, because it's true. It's like, and depending, and that's why it's also interesting when we talk about where we come from or what our heritage is, our background. In Chile, we have a very, very tiny Afro-descendant community.
Yeah.
Very tiny. I don't know, 0.0 something percent. Unlike our neighbors, Peru, maybe even Argentina, but Peru has a higher percentage of Afro-descendant communities, and like I said, Argentina, maybe Bolivia. Yeah. And as you go up the...
I mean, yeah, the Central America. Yeah,
Central America, Honduras, Caribbean, yeah. Right? So for us, I mean, for me growing up, it's like Black people. It was like, oh, wow, cool. Yeah. That is so different. Oh, look at that beautiful color. But then when we moved to the U.S. and as we grew up, it's like, yeah, I guess for other people, Black is not so cool. Yeah. So all of these questions. And so there is all of these sentiment. And my sister's married to a Black man. And that was a big thing in our family because nobody else is married to a Black man.
Yeah.
And so all of these things, so we started talking about that internally in our ERG group. It's like, yeah, really, how do we deal with that? And how do we talk to our families? And so I said, you know, I think it's time that we follow Seattle Children's example and do a cafecito time. So we're having our first cafecito time next Thursday.
Congratulations. Yeah. Thursday seems to be and the day for conversations.
And it was so funny because I'm like, if we get like 10 people to show up, that'll be great. We've gotten so many, I mean, replies of, I'll be there. This is great. It's like, I don't know, like 30, 40 people.
Wow.
And that is so, yeah, that baffled me because I thought I was just going to be there with like two or three other people and online. And so I'm excited. And that just tells me people just want space to talk and share spaces, yeah, and build relationships. And
they don't want it to just be about work conversations. Like, no, they want to have, no, like, we're so much more than just... When we're at work, we're more than that.
And oh, yeah.
And I will tell you, don't downplay the two or three people. So, like, I will tell you, our cafecito times are not tons of people. Like, mm-hmm, while we have, like, over 200 members.
Yeah.
The times I've been on the cafecito times, like, it's anywhere from four. I think the busiest day I saw, there was almost, like, 20 of us on the call. But for the most part, it's usually between, like, four and eight people. And that really helps the conversation, uh-huh, because, like, people really feel like they can share and things, yeah, like that. And it doesn't feel... I think I do concern myself is like, if it gets too big, like, are people gonna want to share?
Yeah.
And I think that was the only thing about that. But yeah, I can't wait to hear how it
I'm
went.
Excited.
Is it gonna be a reoccurring thing or...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a recurring meeting. Right now, we only have it in the morning so that our colleagues in our Washington, D.C. office can, yeah, join. So we have like an early morning cafecito and it's one of those invites that it's... I think it's pretty clear. This is like no pressure, no commitment.
Yeah.
Just have it on your calendar and come as you please. Come and go as you please.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it'll be interesting to have our first one. And like you said, some days there may be three people and other days we might have the 30. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I'm excited. And you know, we are doing other things. And because we are... Latinx community is not very big at the foundation, people are really excited about what we're going to do with our group, our external ERG engagement with the session coming up on resilience. And yeah, it'll be,
yeah,
good.
Preventing burnout and things like that. Yeah.
Yep.
So great. I'm so happy. I can't wait to hear. And maybe we'll have ideas that we can use from each other and things like that. Because I'm sure there's going to be things that like come out of yours that will be like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. Like, why did we not think about that? I'll have to invite you. You'll have to join one of ours. And see, we do
that
one.
That would be cool.
And the great thing about it, Seattle Children's, we're all here. So we don't have to worry about the time zone, things like that. So we get to have one in the morning and one in the afternoon. So that really helps us. Yeah.
And that's one of the great things about our group of ERG leaders. Because, you know, we get to exchange ideas and... Of course, with September around the corner, September, yeah, October, and Hispanic Heritage Month around the corner, I'm always, every year for me, it's like, okay, what are we going to do? Something that's meaningful. Oh. And I mean, because I'd love to have happy hour for everybody. Great. I'm always up for a drink and laughs.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes I feel that people outside the Latinx community think that's all we're about.
Yeah.
And I'd like to just... make sure that we have opportunities to show our culture in different ways.
Exactly.
So, yeah, trying to start to think a little bit about what we're going to do for Hispanic Heritage Month. So I get ideas from all of you, yeah, of so, things, yeah, that you've done. So that's
no, fun. I agree. I love that part of our group. We all share our ideas and there's like so many things. I'm like, I think we could try something like that. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And for the listeners who don't know, Hispanic Heritage Month is in the United States. So if for any of my listeners that may not be here in the States or be, if Pilar shares this and she has family in other parts of the world that are listening, for us in the U.S., Hispanic Heritage Month runs from September 16th to October 16th and really comes out of a really interesting kind of, the Johnson administration did a week. And most people don't know this, but LBJ coming from Texas, he was a teacher. And he was a teacher along the Mexican-Texas border. And he had a very big tie to the Mexican community there along the border. And so he went ahead and granted it. And strangely enough, it was during the Reagan administration that it moved to a whole month. While, yes, we don't have a full month like other history months and things like that, we'll straddle the two and we love it.
Yeah.
But yes, every time when I know Hispanic Heritage Month is coming, I start to think, I'm like, what are we going to do? Like, we have to make an impact. For us at the hospital, it's very impactful for, like, we have to think about, we don't want to do the flags and fun. Like, we want to do that because, yes, it is fun, but yeah, we want to have a more meaningful impact. Like, sure, how do we make changes? Like, how do we make sure that we share our culture and things like that? So, agree. I think,
yeah,
I love that we're doing this group now. I love that we meet on a regular basis, because 100%, like, the group could have very much dismantled as soon as we went into pandemic, but we all strung out,
yeah,
stayed on, and we all said, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to build content? How are we going to support each other? And I always feel like we're the small group. So I love when I hear that you're like, oh, well, we're just like 1% of like this organization. I'm like, okay, so we're not like, we're still like, we're in the same game as everybody else. And I think that it's really fun that we're now getting to partner. And I can tell you, like, when I talk to, like, other people in my group and I'm like, oh, I'm getting to work with these people and we're going to do this, they're 100% fascinated because they love, yeah, that we're not just Seattle Children's, that we're just really big kind of organization. And friendly reminder, while, yes, I work for Seattle Children's, I don't speak for Seattle Children's, nor do I. So my views on this podcast always represent, yeah, Seattle Children's. And I would assume that probably Pilar's
same here.
Very same. Like,
this is just Pilar speaking, who happens to work at the Gates Foundation, but yes, I don't speak for them or on behalf of them. Yes.
And while we both probably attend events on behalf of our organizations, yeah, and things like that, those conversations are very different. This is a different, mm-hmm, type of conversation. These are two people who just happen to know each other through work, who are friends and having a conversation about, exactly, what it means to be a Latinx leader. So if any of our employers are listening, please know that that is our disclaimer today.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah. So we talked about, like, we're talking about being a community leader. How do you manage that relationship being a community leader? You have mentioned that you sit on the board of directors for Casa Latina, which is a, do you want to kind of give a quick, like, 1 minute, sure, synopsis of what Casa Latina is and what they do and how you...
Yeah. So I became familiar with Casa Latina as I was engaged with Latinos in Philanthropy at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, as we selected them as a community partner. And most people are more familiar with the Centro de la Raza here in Seattle because it's so big and it started out of, it's been around for quite a while, and it started out as an effort of, back then, what they were called, the Four Amigos, and an occupancy of an old school in Beacon Hill. So anyways, they have a fascinating story. And
I know I gotta find somebody from there.
They're the ones that that are mostly on people's mind when you talk about local organizations that are working for Latino immigrants. And I came across Casa Latina and started learning more about their work. And they have evolved from being a very small local organization to a larger one. Still not so large, but there are
but
planning.
People definitely know them.
And they're planning on growing and expanding to South Seattle, probably Kent, Auburn, around that area, because there's need there. And they support immigrants, workers. So they do trainings and they do job placement. They have great trainings and workshops for women, like leadership and women's empowerment programs. They worked on a Bill of Rights for domestic workers, and that was amazing. So they're very engaged. I always think, you know, when people come migrate to the U.S. because they want a better life for their families back home,
yeah,
you know, they have to come and navigate this very complex system. And yes, some people are undocumented, and sometimes it takes a long time for them to be documented, right?
Exactly.
So in that process...
And that process isn't easy.
It's not easy, and so many people take advantage of undocumented workers.
100%.
It's atrocious. Ridiculous. It's horrible. So to, you know, sometimes I think not every state has these type of organizations, and I think they're so needed because they stand up for workers' rights, and they tell people you still have rights.
You're still a human being.
And, you know, if the legal pay minimum wage here is $15 an hour, you shouldn't be paid $5 an hour.
Exactly.
So all of these things. And I've been able to be there when they do this kind of like, it's a very democratic system. They get all of these requests for day workers, yeah. construction or moving or gardening. I mean, whatever like day labor you need. And they raffle those opportunities among the people who show up in the mornings, their members, the Casa Latina members. And at first I was like, oh my God, they maybe have 100 requests and 200 people.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking. But the ones who stay behind, they find other things to do. It's like, okay, so today I'm going to, I don't know, help out around here, or I'm going to join a class of something because I want to improve my skills. So it's really cool. So they do a lot of training, but they do a lot of advocacy and try to influence policy.
Yeah.
So very humble when you say Latino leader, because I think I'm still work in progress. I try to do my best, and it's like my little bit of grain of sand in this whole beach.
Yeah.
But I think it's important. I've always thought, so I briefly mentioned earlier that my country underwent a long dictatorship yep. period, 17 years, which is not, I mean, yes,
some
I
totally,
some so. Countries have had longer than that, but it just made me realize that equality and having equal access to opportunities, it's just important. That's just the way things should be. And I just have this passion for social justice, and it just breaks my heart and makes me angry when people are taken advantage of. So it's like, if I can use my voice and or my skills, or if I can contribute in any way,
yeah.
I want to do that. So I do that by giving back as much as I can, or by doing something like this, maybe a
yeah.
podcast. Just telling my story, because, you know, it's like I went to public schools here and I went to community college
yeah.
and, you know, I speak English with an accent and, you know, it's like, and I have a great job at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
And you're an amazing person.
And I'm an amazing person.
And you have a great energy.
And I sing in a band.
She keeps saying that she's not this community leader, but let me just tell you. So she chairs this ERG at a philanthropic organization who gives back in education. She's a singer. She somehow snagged a boyfriend and like has long distance relationships. She kind of like, she just has these plans for herself. She's decided to join, like, she very graciously, when I asked her to be on the podcast, said sure, which is really important, because I think the real big point of this podcast is really representation. And I think about, like, you did mention it, is like, I also grew up in public schools. And I was telling you, like, I grew up in a community that in my hometown was not always seen as the best community. It was not where people wanted to live. But I think about, like, who I am today
yeah.
and where I'm at is, like, I didn't have anybody that looked like me.
Yeah.
Like, this was not working in healthcare in the Pacific Northwest, I get to make my own schedule. I come and go as I want. I have a supportive
yeah.
boss. I get to work with clinical and non-clinical teams. Like, that is not something that, like, when I think about jobs that were told to me as a kid, like, those were not things that were taught to me. And I, like, as I meet more and more people, it's like, nobody probably told you could work in philanthropy
and work
in emergency response and have an international job. Like, for me, it was always like, you're going to go to college, or you're going to need to get a trade, and you're going to have to work in a trade. Like, you're going to install air conditioners or something like that. Like, that was where I grew up. And so I love when I get to meet these people who, like, you have an interesting job and you've had an interesting path, and that was so important to bring you on the podcast for that reason. So yes, you are a community leader, and yes, you may not be, like, I think we both get to interact with very high level community
yeah.
leaders. Like, when we think about, like, El Centro and Estela and things like
yeah.
that, she is somebody who's well known in this area.
Oh my God, yeah.
I mean, I would love to have her on the podcast at some point, but because she was one of those four amigos, and she
yeah.
was there at the beginning of when that really started, and she's very well known here in the Pacific Northwest and Washington and things like that, about being a community leader for the Latinx community and things like that. So who knows, you may be the next one. And I kind of think of our group that way. It's like,
yeah,
let's be honest, like, the nine of us probably employ what would you say, probably like 30-40% of this area?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I mean, we make a large portion, and if we can make an impact.
Boeing, Starbucks,
us. Amazon, yeah, Microsoft, yeah.
Nordstrom. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I think we're all leaders in our own ways, and that's, you know, it's like there's not one cookie cutter, you know, model of what a leader is and how you go about exercising your leadership. I think it depends. It's situational at some point. So, you know, I think we, again, like I said earlier, we're all about giving back. And if we can use our voices, and sometimes our very loud voices, and some of us may be introverts at times, and when we need to, we, you know, get loud and busy. And, you know, that's, I think, the cool thing about being recognized as a leader is that you all, in my case, I think, you know, great, but I also want to learn from others. No.
Like, I love learning from all of y'all. I think that I love that y'all, as again, our partner, he's always just like, your millennial view. And I'm just like, I don't feel like I'm learning. Like, I don't feel like I'm teaching y'all anything. Like, I really feel like I'm learning from all of y'all. And then, like, after the call, I'm like, maybe, like, they're saying these questions because, like, I do bring a point of view and I have to remind myself.
Yeah.
Because if I get too far into that, I'm not as important as everybody else, I get worried, like, I'm going to go down that pathway.
But that's a cultural thing, too. Oh, that's 100%. A Latinx very cultural trait about feeling like, you know, maybe I'm, you know, am I really a leader, or do I really have what it takes, or should I really apply to that position because I don't fit 100% of the description? No. We need to recognize and be aware of what we bring to the table, and that we have every right to be there just like anybody else. 100%. And you know, it's like, even if we don't meet 100% of the criteria for something, let's just go for it. Yeah. Because once we get to that interview, to that meeting, to that conversation space, we can blow people's minds off. So it's just a matter of, and before I used to say, I was given the opportunity. No. From now on, like, I'm changing that narrative. I'm saying I'm taking the opportunity. Yeah. The opportunities are there.
What a great way to
say
that.
You have to take them. You have to make them your own, and make sure you find them. You know, it's not, don't wait for things to be given to you. Just make it happen. Yeah. And you may need help from others to do that. Yeah. So reach out and see what those resources are and make it happen. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, great. Great. So now, as we start getting towards the end of this part of the conversation, I'm going to ask you some philosophical, crazy questions. Ooh. They're not philosophical, let's be honest. So do you wish you could change a relationship with anybody dead or alive in your life?
Ooh, I know it's a deep one.
I was like, I need a deep question to kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel comfortable sharing?
Yeah, of course. Growing up, because my early childhood was in Chile, growing up, I had a neighborhood friend who became my best friend.
Yeah.
Then I moved to the U.S., and this seems so long ago. We used to write letters to each other. Letters, you know. Oh. We did write on papers.
Oh, my goodness. Was this in cursive, too? Did you have to send it on the pony? I mean, tell me more.
So it was so cool getting a letter in the mail. And so over the years, you know, we just... our friendship continued, and every time I traveled back to Chile, she was there. But somehow we drifted apart, as it happens sometimes, right? Yeah. But it's so weird. I don't think I ever had the chance, and I don't know where she's at now. Yeah. I can probably find her online somehow.
We can Google her.
But it's like, to have the chance to say, you know, it's okay that we have different lives, and we've made different choices. And so sometimes I regret not having had or giving myself the time, the space to have that conversation and had that relationship kind of like fade away. And I still don't know why. I mean, it's when there's so many things that we share and I know interesting stories that we have and
history. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's one of the ones where I'm like, and if it were, and when I think about people who are gone now, it's like, and knowing that, let me see, in 2 days it'll be my grandfather's birthday, I wish I would have more time with him and just to talk and
yeah,
and learn more about his different experiences. Yeah, that would have been nice.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. What's one life lesson you wish you had known in your early years that now that you kind of look back in, like, what would Pilar today tell Pilar of 24? What's one piece of advice you'd give her?
So I think I would have told myself back then, it's like what I kind of like what I just said. It's like, go for it. You know, take a risk. Don't be afraid of change. It took me a while. For our American way of life and culture that we also share, we leave home as soon as we can, right? I left home at 26, 27.
Okay.
Because I was just so afraid of making that leap, not about leaving my home, my parents' home.
So you lived at home until you were 26?
I lived at home. Oh, yeah. I lived at home.
Very Latina of you. I love it.
Let me see. 19, yeah, I must have been like 26.
Okay.
And it's like, and not, and my dad, I remember my dad joking and saying, it's like, are you ever leaving? and now he's like, when are you coming for a visit?
I'm busy.
There's a pandemic, okay? I can't travel. I think that I think back now, I'm like, I should have just told myself, like, just go for it. Take a risk. I guess I always thought I'm the oldest. My brother had gotten married already. My sister was, you know, my sister and I are, I have a 15 year difference. So she's 15 years younger than me. I'm like, my mom needs help. It's like, I always found excuses why they needed me to stay home.
So relatable.
So it's like, yeah, I maybe should have started my journey earlier. So I think that's one of the things I would tell my younger self. And the other one, and this is very personal, and I wasn't so young,
yeah,
maybe my early 30s. I would tell my younger self, like, get out of those bad relationships when you know that they're starting to go bad.
Ooh,
because nice. I waited too long to get out of one that was not healthy for me. And it was all about one, oh shoot, I'm going to end this relationship and I'm going to be all alone. And two, oh, maybe he does this because, you know, he's depressed. No.
Yeah.
Never again. So it's like, I would tell my younger self, you see that going down the wrong path? Exit, you know, end it, leave. Because once I did, yes, it was painful,
yeah,
but it's so much better.
That's so true.
Oh, yeah.
That reminds me both of your story about the person that you lost contact with and the one in your 30s is, I remind myself in something that I learned probably in my early 20s, that I kind of, like, some people are here for a season and some people are here for a lifetime, and you have to be able to be okay with both.
Yes.
And like, there are, and it's gonna suck. Yeah. Some people that you thought were gonna be here for a lifetime were only here for a season, but they teach you things, and like, you learn something from that, yep, relationship, and you learn that you're not gonna stick around and that you're not gonna be in unhealthy relationships.
Yeah.
Because while we have discussed a lot of the really great things about really good relationships, there's bad things about relationships.
Yeah.
And it's hard to identify those things, and it's hard, especially when you're in those moments, it's not easy to step away from them, because you're like you mentioned, like, I'm gonna be alone.
Yeah.
Which is a scary thing in the world. But then, like, I don't know, I guess in my mid-20s I really became more comfortable with being alone. And then, like, when you're 30, I don't know what happens when you're 30, but, like, as soon as you turn 30, like, all of a sudden you're like, I can be alone. I don't like anybody anyways. Like, all of a sudden you're like, I don't like people anyways. Like, I want to live in a van. And I'm like, people are like, you're going to live in a van by yourself? I was like, I live in an apartment by myself. I was like, I've been through a pandemic. I was like, I haven't seen anybody in months. What do you mean? I was like, I was built for this, guys. I was like, if anything, this pandemic taught me a lot. Like, actually, I can do this.
But yeah.
Great pieces of advice. And the last question that we're going to kind of wrap on, is there something that you can look back on your life that was a pivotal moment that you can look back, like, that you look back on now and you're like, I don't know if I would be the same person if that didn't have that hadn't had happened?
So when I decided to leave my parents' home, I could have gone anywhere, right?
Yeah.
And stay in Miami or go somewhere in the US.
Yeah.
But I decided to go back to Chile.
Yeah.
As an adult, and I moved when I was 10, and I had been back, but going back on vacation, it's totally different as going back as an adult and, you know, trying to get a job and building new relationships, even though I knew people, but, you know, everyone's busy doing their own things, and you, And that was a life-changing choice for me, because that's when I realized, oh, my life is not going to be linear. It's not like I got my degree in education. I'm going to teach and I'm going to teach forever. And I might get a degree in, you know, like a master's degree in something education related and, you know, continue, which is fine. That's okay for people who choose that. It just opened up so many opportunities for me. And the fact that I'm bilingual in Chile, it was just amazing. So it was a great opportunity. And I would, if anyone has the opportunity to live abroad at any point, I would totally encourage you to do that. Joe, just living in another state is already so different great. But living abroad, even though I'm from Chile and I was, you know, I grew up there, just being there. And I lived with, I moved into my grandparents' house for a little bit because, you know, hey, that's what I do. Yeah. I lived with my grandparents for a year or so. And then, you know, until I was stable enough to make it on my, financially stable enough to make it on my own. And it's just so cool having to deal with, like, how do you, you know, like renting an apartment. I did ended up buying an apartment at one point.
Yeah.
And all of these things that, you know, loss and dealing with things that are different from the U.S.
Yeah.
And that was it. I think it built up my character and I guess some of those leadership skills that you see in me today.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So that kind of wraps up all of our questions. And I'm just going to kind of recap some of the things that I'm hearing from Pilar today, things that I really learned and things. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, thank you, Pilar, for being here. But I really heard that you are really talking about that your life's not linear, and that's totally okay. And that being adaptable is really key to making smart decisions and feeling comfortable with your life. Like, that has really allowed you to flourish and be adaptable and helped you manage your relationships, because not every relationship is the same, and you have to be able to adapt and change and things like that. Being involved in your community is important, making sure that you're standing up for the right things, and you have to do work. And like, people can't expect all of this to happen overnight. Like, this has been a journey for you, and I think that's really beautiful that you've said that. Like, you've talked about, like, in your early 20s and then in your late 20s and in your 30s, and now you're at a different, almost in your 50s, and like, this is a whole new adventure. And I imagine that if I had met Pilar when she was in her 20s, the Pilar of today would have been very different.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, you look happy, but also it looks like there was probably some really rough times in your life. And so, not to say, like, I guess I need to clarify how that looks, but like, you can tell when people have been through some shit. Like, let's just be honest. Like, that is, been honest. Like, that's what happens. But yeah, like, 100%. Like, you can tell, like, you've probably been through a couple of things, but like, you're still on the other side. You have a smile. You're willing to share your story. You're willing to have these honest conversations. And let's be honest, like, in the Latino, in the Latinx community, like, these are not conversations that we hear all the time. Like, these are things that you only talk to your family about. Mm-hmm, and God forbid anybody else listen to them, because that's just shameful. We don't talk about such things.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that. So if somebody wanted to support anything, is there anything that you want to tell people, like, hey, I would love if you want to support something, this is where you can support, like, Casa Latina, NGOs, the Gates Foundation. Is there anything? What is something that you would love to plug today?
I think that, of course, if I can plug for Casa Latina and encourage people to donate or volunteer, that's great. But it's just about giving back to your community.
Yeah.
You know, there's just local organizations, especially now through the pandemic, they are just doing so much work for people who need so much help right now. So you have your local food banks, and you have organizations that are making masks or trying to help people find jobs. You know, it's like there's an organization in your community close by that are probably doing great work. So I would encourage everyone to learn about what local organizations are doing. In my case, you know, I care about immigrants, social equality, and racial equality. So I look for that type of organization. Yeah. So Casa Latina, Northwest Immigrant Rights Projects, you know, Latino Community Fund, Centro de la Raza, Entre Hermanos. There's all of this. There's diverse organizations out there. You know, just like I support them, I support the Seattle Symphony, and I support, you know, arts, and I try to support the West Seattle Food Bank, where, you know, where I live. So I think it's just about it's not just about our little circle, which is important, of course, but we're all privileged. 100%. You know, if we have jobs, we have a steady paycheck. Those of us who do, those of us who have our family around, even though they may be a little distance physically, you know, we're so lucky, and other people don't have that. So I think it's about giving back. Yeah.
Good.
So yeah, and I'm on LinkedIn if you want to find me, Pilar Pacheco, and I'm on Instagram as well, ppacheco19.
So yes, all that will be in the show notes as well, and there will be a beautiful link there so you can look up some of those organizations. But like Pilar said, like if you're a listener and you're not here in the Seattle or the Pacific Northwest, the Puget Sound area, take an opportunity. This is a great opportunity to educate yourself. This goes back to the whole idea of Black Lives Movement. It is not the responsibility of our Black community to educate us. It is our responsibility to educate ourselves. Yeah. It's the same way about being involved in your community. It is your responsibility to go out, find that information, because you need to find a place that feels comfortable for you, because that's going to make it way more easy for you to be involved, to want to be involved, to feel excited about being involved. So we will list some of those. I'll list a couple of the ones that I also work with and things like that. But yes, please go follow Pilar's Instagram. I haven't done it, so I will be doing that too. You can find her linked from our Instagram, My Latinx Life, on Instagram, Twitter, and we have a website so that you can find us, find her information there as well. So thank you again, Pilar, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This has been great. It's been really fun. And I hope that people had a great time, also have a great time listening to it.
Me too. And who knows, maybe she'll come in with another group. I have some other ideas now. So thank you to all my listeners and have a great day. Thanks for joining me on this episode. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and my website, all under My Latinx Life. See you next time.